Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow, Jerry Seinfeld, thanks for being on the Gary Hour. Will you just tell us about yourself?
The key to your job is specific things. The worst thing an interviewer can do is say, just talk about yourself.
Oh, okay. So, okay. Will you tell us about your humor? It's very prejudiced.
I don't do any humor about prejudice.
But you make humor.
I don't know why you think the humor is about prejudice oftentimes.
Doesn't it have to be? I mean, like, you talk about the airline food and with the pilots and the penguin pants.
They hate normal pants.
Yeah.
It seems like the last thing they want to be seen in is just normal pants.
So you're prejudiced against pilots.
No. Is that prejudice?
Is it prejudiced against pilots because it's stupid the way they dress and you think it's funny?
Yes.
Ooh, I said something. Will you tell me how I'm doing in this interview?
Okay.
I'm doing great.
No.
Not so good?
Yes. If you want, I will give you my report.
Ooh, would you? This has been my best interview ever.
I'm going to give you a 5.
A 5?
The questions weren't that good. Somehow we got to some very funny things.
It was funny.
So I'm going to give you a 5 out of 5.
Ooh, out of 5!
Yes, but I did most of the work.
Welcome to episode 21. This episode we have New York-based comedian Kyle Ayers. He came from all the way around the corner to talk to us. You might listen to this and say, oh, that's the guy? I know that. I read that. Kyle Ayers has been a comedian for a bit. He's going to be writing for the new Samantha Bee talk show called Full Frontal. I think it starts in a couple weeks. We talk about the art of comedy. Talk about vulnerability towards the end. It was a good conversation. I really enjoyed. I hope you do too. Me, Matt Kaplan, and Kyle Ayers. Yeah. Kyle Ayers, thanks for being here.
Of course.
Yes. Yes. All right. Yes. So I did a little research on you. I don't really know you that well.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I know. I asked Tom Cowell to give me some information on you.
Oh, well, that's not really research.
Yeah.
Well, everything I've said to him has been a lie.
Really?
No, it's good. It's
good. Oh, good. Because he told me some horrible stuff you did with your cousin. No, just kidding.
Well, second cousin, but... In the eyes of the law, cousin, yes.
From where you're from, Missouri?
I am from Missouri.
And it's legal there to sleep with your 13-year-old cousins, right?
See, that's where they get you, is the 13.
Yeah.
It says teen.
Yeah.
But it's still a low number.
Well, you know, in Oklahoma, 14 was the legal age for a while.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a creed. If you know that fact, people wonder why you know that fact.
Yeah, Gary. I'll tell you the story why I know that fact. Because my band at the time was on tour in Oklahoma. We were playing a show in Oklahoma. And the drummer, you know, when we're band on tour, we're always looking for a place to stay.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, you want to come stay with us? I'm like, all right, yeah, that sounds good. And then we find out that they're in high school and they're having a high school party because their parents are away.
How old were you when this happened?
I was probably in my mid 20s.
Okay.
Yeah. Either way, it's still.
So you're staying because their parents are out of town?
No, we didn't stay because okay. I was like, wait, high school? No way. So the drummer finds out that and the drummer comes up to me and he goes, well, you know what? The legal age here is 14. And that's how I found that fact.
Yeah,
out.
Sure, man. Sure it is. I believe you.
Have you fact-checked that, or you're just like, oh, a drummer told me?
I did at some point look it up, and they changed it to 16, I believe.
Ah, thanks, Obama.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't want anybody to have fun.
Well, they should be able to drive away after it happens, so 16 makes sense.
Yeah, and it's even 16 is really young.
Yeah.
That's so young.
Mm. I say 40.
So you seem to be doing very well as a New York comedian.
Sure. You know, everyone has a very nice shell of a front that they have up all the time. Everything looks great online.
Well, you have some really good representation. Patton Oswalt.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you're with this company that has some really big people.
Yeah, it is. It definitely, on paper, when you look at the agency that reps me, it's just like, oh, just scroll by Dave Chappelle and scroll down to Kyle's name. And it's in alphabetical order, which always benefits me because my last name starts with an A. So they're just like, man, this must be an order of quality. And mine's a picture I took of myself in my room.
But that's a sign of getting somewhere.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, they're great and they're wonderful. And I met them at that Montreal festival last summer and they're just the best.
Because you got into the Just for Laughs festival. Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was like a surreal thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hang out a lot around comedians. I have, you know, most of my friends are comedians just because that's the only people I am around when I am around people. But it was very surreal. You just like kind of dropped in. I'd never been out of the country or anything. So I found out I got in and they were like, you have a passport, right?
Yeah.
And this was, the festival was in the middle of July and this was like June 10th.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah. Totally have a passport.
Right. Because
I'm not going to say no. I don't want them to be like, then never mind. I was like, I'll figure it out. And I go, and the passport got here. I left on Thursday. I left on a Wednesday, and the passport got here Monday, the Monday before I left.
Wow.
And it had gotten lost. And then there's a weird thing happening with Missouri's IDs where the government is not saying that they qualify. I can't use my Missouri license at airports anymore. But the government's saying the way they're designed is too easily forged. And Missouri had like 10 years to fix this.
Wow.
They never did. And there's like three, it's like Missouri, Nebraska, Minnesota, and like one other state.
They're on the watch list.
They're just like, yeah. And so I had to like go around this to prove who I was without using a driver's license to get a passport and then have it rushed here. And it was just crazy.
Is that still happening with the Missouri?
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I renewed my license in Missouri because I like to vote in Missouri.
Is it a Republican state?
It's like a slightly right-leaning swing state.
Okay.
It's voted Republican since HW, but it's always like pushing a little bit closer and to the left, but it's always pretty it's always pretty right down the middle. And I actually still vote sometimes in like senator elections and representative elections and local elections.
You do, huh?
Yeah, New York kind of has its votes figured out. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
You're casting your vote into a pretty skewed pool here.
Totally.
And so I feel a little bit more valuable in Missouri, and I keep up with it.
You just want to be valued.
I just want to be valued.
Your votes are valued there. Yeah.
And it's, you know, I don't know.
Do you have Missouri pride?
Yeah.
You do?
I have a big, I think I have family pride, and that's where I grew up. I like a lot of things about Missouri a lot. It's got such a weird history it's sort of been a swing state of history, not even like political, but also social and even like through like civil war and everything.
I don't know much about Missouri.
Weird state. And I tried to keep away from affiliation during the Civil War, but
why were they
slaves?
They're pro-slave state?
Yeah.
Still,
yeah. Yeah, well, the tax write-offs are incredible. no, they, They just try to be politically neutral and stay as like a Wild West state longer than you possibly could think. So, and then even when you talk to people about what Missouri is, mm-hmm. where you're at dictates where they view the state as. So it's pretty much a Midwestern state. But if I'm in Boston mm-hmm. or here, people call it the South. Huh. If I'm in Georgia, people from Missouri Yankees.
I don't know why. I'm just assuming, but I'm thinking that I'm seeing in my head that you grew up very rurally.
The town, like the city I'm from, is like 800 people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably 25 minutes outside of actual Kansas City.
Okay,
but the city of Kansas City does not sprawl.
Uh-huh.
It immediately becomes, it's like the downtown area. They're working on it. They're trying to make it a bigger thing, and it's like kind of an up and coming.
Yeah.
City, but it's like a downtown area, and then there's like a couple of small sprawl places, and then all of a sudden it's like not great neighborhoods, then suburbs. You know, like a lot of big cities are set mm-hmm. up where it's like the people who are pushed out of the big city for the
yeah.
money.
Yeah.
Like live New York? Surround it. Yeah. And a lot like DC too, where it's like mm-hmm. got that like core center and then where no one wants to live or go. And then on the outside of that is where the richer people live. And
right. Well, and DC gets like
three more rings outside of that.
Okay. So it's like, so it's still kind of a little rural. It's not suburban.
Yeah. It touches a suburb, like where I went to high school and stuff.
Okay.
But it's where I'm, where the city I grew up in is like on a lake.
Oh, nice. And did you go to college outside of Missouri?
And no, University of Missouri, which is right in the center of the state in Columbia.
Okay. So you stayed in Missouri. So you got Missouri pride.
Pretty much every time I go one train further is the furthest away I'd ever really been until I went to Canada. But like I moved to New York. I'd never been here.
How long have you been in New York?
4.5 years.
Okay. Did you do the Just for Laughs festival from Missouri?
No.
You were living here?
I was living here.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Were you doing comedy in college in Missouri?
I did a little bit. I worked as like a reservationist at a comedy club. And the people would come in and I'd be like, you have a reservation? They're like, yeah, they go sit down. Because I like being around comedy.
Yeah.
I did improv in college because of a friend signed me up
for an audition.
Yeah. I went to go watch her. She was worried I wasn't gonna like meet people in college. And so it's like the second day I was in college and it's like 30,000 people at the school.
Mm-hmm.
It's it's a big like Division I.
Wait, who was worried you weren't gonna meet anybody?
A friend of mine from high school.
Okay.
Who was a year older, so she was already there.
Okay.
And so she signed me up for an improv audition without telling me.
What a good friend.
Yeah.
Was she right? Are you bad at meeting people?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe not as bad as she thought, but that like has since then I went to that audition with her to watch her, and they called me, and I go up, and it becomes a big thing because I'm too anxious to be like, I'm not supposed to be here for this, you know what I mean? So I was like, I'll just walk up and getting on that improv group sort of funneled me towards stand up just through like the general like
comedy community,
comedy, and you learn that stand up is a thing, and then it's like shaped my whole life, and I don't want to give her. She will claim as the right amount of credit if you ask her.
Well, it's her low opinion of your social skills led you to
exactly.
comedy.
Exactly. Yeah. Usually it's people's low opinion of their own social skills that lead them to comedy, but mine were so low, other people could feel them.
Was she in the comedy world herself?
No.
And did she think she just thought you were funny?
Mm-hmm.
So she like kicked you into the comedy community.
Yeah.
You got forced in it.
And I got the like softest... I don't really know how to describe it. Like, you're basically, this improv group would perform in front of 250 people every week.
Wow.
And it was the softest crowd. So I was like, man, comedy's crazy. You never have to try.
Right. Well, that's actually good because you're doing well right away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wasn't deterred. And then the first few times I did stand up went so well because it was like all friends.
Mm.
The first time I ever did stand up was alone in Kansas City, and it was so bad I didn't do it for maybe 8 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And bombed at this open mic. I was 20.
Did you have material?
I had jokes.
Yeah.
you had to be 21 to get into this bar and to do this open mic. I was 20. So I used a fake ID. So the first time I ever did stand up was under the name Terrence David Edward Krause III.
I heard really good things about that guy.
He's funny. He was just on Conan. and so I bombed. And I like thought I wanted to look older, so I bought cigarettes, and I was smoking them in this bar, and I don't smoke.
Yeah.
And so I like was just like holding a cigarette
like a joint
differently,
or something.
Like a joint, and like coughing a little bit, and like then just like having them out by me.
Yeah.
And then I just bombed.
It probably made you look younger, actually.
Yeah, it definitely. Everything, looking back, everything I did was something someone would do to look older, mm-hmm. but nothing anyone would do.
Right.
And the guy then ripped on me afterwards, the host, and he was like, everything about that just felt real bad. And I was like, oh, shit.
That's not cool.
And so I just didn't do it for, that was in the summer, and I probably didn't do it again until the next spring.
Were you just traumatized from it?
I mean, they're just like, oh, well, maybe I don't like this.
Right.
I'll just go keep doing cush improv.
There's a psychological reason why it's good to be successful right away, at least a little bit. Like video games, they always let you win the first board to kind of reel you in. A little bit of encouragement at first is good.
Yeah.
Because the first time I did comedy, I did mediocre. You know, I got a couple laughs and then dead silence. But those couple laughs, I was like, all right, potential. You know?
Once you get that little tease.
Exactly. But I think if I would have had a horrible experience and then the host made fun of me, I might have taken 8 months, you know?
Yeah, there was, I took all this, I just didn't, there was no, the next time I did it, there was like a comedy contest at mm-hmm. the club that I worked as a reservationist at. And with Ryan Beck, if you know Ryan Beck,
yeah,
he worked there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did this comedy contest and did a couple of different jokes and weren't that great, but no one was good. And mm-hmm. even like the comedians working the club aren't that great. And so it went pretty well. And the guy who ran the club was like, you know, you actually have some thing happening here. And
he said that.
Yeah.
There you go.
He was like, so don't not do this. And he goes, if you want, you can work more nights and watch more comedy if you want. And and then another guy, this comedian Dan Friesen, who's from Columbia, who lives in Chicago now, who I thought was the funniest person on the show, who mm-hmm. was incredibly funny.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, hey, I want to start a show, and this is such a foreign concept to me.
Start your own thing, right?
And so he's like, there's this bar, and it's like this punk ish bar, and this owner is this insanely supportive guy who's just wonderful, who's from New Jersey and grew up in New York, who lives in Columbia, Missouri now, and he's just like, yeah, we should be doing it. He's a like a music rock venue, small,
right?
So he's like, we should just do a comedy show once a week. And Dan starts this show, and he asked me to do the first one, and it went really well. And then he asked me to come back, and then I wrote like 7 new minutes a week for 2 years.
Wow.
Sometimes I would go and just sort of like riff it. And mm-hmm. sometimes I would go with like an idea. And a lot of times it wasn't that great. But then that built like such a soft audience in stand-up where I felt comfortable sort of failing. That was just crazy.
Right. Well, isn't that what improv teaches you? To just follow your fear. And
And I think pretty much most improvisers are still failing, which is the good part.
Yeah.
They all fail every time I watch a show.
I find... This is a common debate between stand-ups and improvisers, but I find improv to be way more difficult. And I did improv before stand-up, and I'm so glad it went that way.
Yeah.
Because the improv informs the stand-up really well.
It's such an interesting thing. I did the Second City program and the IO program in Chicago. Uh-huh. And when improv had no stick to it, when it's just like, we're just going to do this thing, I think it's like, I think the hardest times I've laughed might be improv. Huh. And also the least fun I've ever had being around comedy was improv. it's sort of such an extreme where it's like I can watch an okay stand-up and be like, come on, man, let's do this. Let's see this. This is funny. Let's find a thing. But it's like improv at its worst is lower than it's harder for me to enjoy.
That's painful sometimes.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. because imagine watching, it's like what difference, you watch a bunch of, like you watch a juggler fail and you're like, oh, he just dropped it. But you watch like a 5 trapeze artists fail and you're like, oh shit,
that's hilarious.
Like, you're just like, oh man, like I feel bad because their families are here,
yeah,
and none of them wanted them to be trapeze artists and they have to go work at this PR agency anyways.
Their trapeze stage moms are crying.
They have a trapeze coach who really never made it as a trapeze artist anyways.
That's why I moved from New York to go.
The trapeze in Chicago is actually better. People always talk about it all the time, but it's just like, it's not the opportunity there, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really, you know, I don't hate on either of them too much. I still, there's particular improv shows I like to watch, and some people are so good.
That's refreshing, because I don't understand where it comes from, the stand-up rage against improvisers.
Yeah,
I don't quite get it.
I think stand-ups are kind of generally...
curmudgeon-y.
Yeah, and they feel like that's infringing, because someone who does improv will call themselves a comedian.
Oh.
And someone who does stand-up is like, no, you didn't earn You know what I mean? You can't buy, you didn't earn, and there's like a weird territorial thing with comedy.
Yeah.
That stand-ups feel infringed upon.
It's an easy target, too. I feel like improv is like the Nickelback or Dave Matthews Band of comedy.
Yeah. You
know? It is an easy target, because it does get really bad. But stand-ups can be an easy target, too. You know?
Oh, yeah. Everyone, in January and February, all comedians lay off of improvisers and go at people who want to try stand-up as a resolution. Or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they just go into this, well, these people filling up all these mics they'll be gone by March. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, if this makes you quit, you probably shouldn't have been here anyways.
Right.
Like, if you're upset about this.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch that as the years go by. Oh, what? And I think about, oh, whatever happened to that person?
Yeah. Like, if you're threatened by the copywriter who's doing this as a dare,
right?
You know, what are you going to do when something real happens?
Are you getting better, like if you go to an open mic and see all the new faces, are you getting better at picking out the ones that'll be here in a couple of years?
Yeah.
You can?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even the people that you're just like, oh, that... It's usually the people who don't go up and you see people at open mics who go up and they're just like... people who make fun of comedy before they've ever written a joke.
Right.
Like real, like... they're just like, this very stern anti-comedy before you just have ever really done comedy.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, it's definitely, you're definitely afraid. I can feel that you're afraid of failing. So you're just going to make fun of what's happening.
Right. Just like shit on it. So if you do fail, it's like, yeah, I didn't care anyway.
Yeah, this wasn't supposed to be funny. Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be. Like the big overarching thing is that it's supposed to be.
Yes.
But yeah, if you come up and you set the, like where your range, if you're so afraid to fail that you can't succeed either, it's just, yeah, you can kind of feel that. But people who go up and fail with jokes, you're just like, okay, well, that person seems like they wanted to do that idea.
Interesting, right. And if you see if they know how to form a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even like looking for trying to say something.
Louis C.K. got asked a similar question because did you see that Louis episode with Bart, the wannabe comedian?
Nate Fernald?
Yeah, he played Bart. So the interviewer asked Louis if he can tell someone that's going to be good or not in whatever amount of years. And he said something interesting. He said, the people that go up there that are really confident and seem comfortable the first few times when they're new, those are usually the ones that will never be great. You know, they might get good eventually, but they're not going to be great. And he said the ones that are kind of like a little in their head or something can actually be the ones that end up great. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it definitely... You know, you can't really tell what's driving someone to want to do something, but you can see someone who's just up when they feel no stakes. Mm-hmm. Like, well, maybe this isn't what you're looking for. Cause it's like, you always want to be getting better.
Yeah. That is the idea.
Yeah.
In general.
Well, we'll see.
Are you getting better?
I hope.
Yeah.
I have had this in the past year. I've sort of tried to take pressure off of myself to be a type of comedian and just really focus on trying to do what I think is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's sort of like adjusted how I'm approaching stage time and what I'm trying to do. And I've pieced together material a lot faster, but I've just sort of quit trying to, I watched Eugene Merman's special on Netflix and I think he's funny.
Yeah.
He's a really funny guy. And I'd never seen a comedy special that was so loose and appropriate.
Right.
It was
him.
Very much his voice.
Yeah.
It was very much what he does. He didn't switch it for TV.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of times you hear it's like, well, the TV set is like this and this is like this. And it's like, well, maybe I work so hard trying to structure a set to get on like late night. And then I'm just like, well, I hate everything I'm saying.
Right.
I'm writing a joke thinking, okay, this would go over and be timed okay like this. And it's like, well, that's not how I want to talk. And so many comedians, that is what they want. That is how they write jokes.
Yeah.
That it just fits into that mold generally.
Yeah.
But that's not, he sort of loosened me up to be more open to trying things.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I have that battle too sometimes, like if I have a joke or a chunk that I think that gets laughs, but I'm like, do I want to be the guy talking about that?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it's such a struggle to drop it.
Do I believe what I'm saying, or did I just know that this is a decent angle?
Yeah.
And has ways to heighten it.
Well, so isn't the goal to become you, or a heightened sense of you?
I hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
You were saying before that you no longer want to be a certain type.
Right.
Were you previously defining yourself as a specific type?
I was just
type?
Really like, this is how the career path works. If I get into Montreal, this opens me up, and I work on a tape for late night, and that opens me up, and I hit some road stuff, and that opens me up, and I write a spec script. You know, it's like, and then it's just like, no, I'm just going to just make the things I want to make, and there's no every day is the easiest day of all time to make your own stuff and to really develop who you want to be. And every day is infinitely easier than it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so to just try and fit some mold because it's what I've seen people around me do, it's like, well, I've never really felt like I was like a lot of other comedians in how I am anyways.
And it actually makes more sense to stand out rather than to try and be like everyone.
Yeah, it may be like a longer path mm-hmm. to whatever. But I feel better about it all the time. I feel better about not necessarily like, all right, I get in at this club and I work on this thing and I try and hit here. It's like, no, it's just this long game where I'm doing what I enjoy.
I'm starting to see it visually. Like, it's almost like you're thinking about yourself either from the outside looking in mm-hmm. or from the inside looking out. Like, the discovery is like, who am I? And then what do I want to put out there? Or is it like, oh, how are people perceiving me? Maybe I should form it this way so they see me as this. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of the change?
I sort of started really listening to myself more on what I think is funny with something mm-hmm. instead of being like, if I have this great funny idea or this thing that I really like, well, how could I structure that into a turn of phrase joke to get a laugh from people to elicit this? And now it's just like, I just am working solely off of what I want to be saying or doing at that moment.
But what if you think something's funny and the crowd just doesn't respond?
Yeah.
Do you keep it?
No. I mean, you change it. You know, you're not going to sit in, you know, 15 times in if no one's enjoyed any part of it. It's time to relook at it. I was doing some shows in the Midwest and they were like rock venue shows, like 75 or 100 people, one night things in a few cities. And I never liked starting the show.
Were they there for music or for comedy?
For comedy. It was okay. Like my show.
That's good.
And I never liked starting the show. And I never liked...
What do you mean starting the show? Like
walking up
out
and being like, here, coming to the state, like having the guy like announce it. And then you come up and you're like, New York's so much different than Missouri. And like getting into like jokes and stuff like that. And I always just like wanted like a comfortable way. So where the show could start, to where people can kind of still be getting drinks and mm-hmm. still be existing and finishing. Like, I didn't want to stop people from the pre-show. And so I started one time while I was walking on stage, I decided I'm going to take roll at the show. And so the venue is this place called the Record Bar in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Had a Facebook event. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the Facebook event on my phone and started taking roll off of the Facebook event. Nice. And I was like, is Kelly Johnson here? And she was like, yeah, here. And I was like, okay, is, you know, Mason whatever here? And he's like, yeah, here.
Right.
And I called off like four people and they were here. And then I got to someone and I was like, is Greg Parker here? And no one said anything.
Uh-huh.
And at this point, people are like super into it.
Right.
People are like so excited that someone's not here. And I was like, okay, well, does anyone have his phone number? And someone was like, yeah. And he just yelled it out. And I was like, well, you're just yelling this guy's phone. Okay, fine. Yell it out. And I called him and he didn't pick up. And I left a voicemail. And I had everyone boo him for not coming to the show. And so I was like, okay, well, let's just keep taking roll.
I hope he didn't get into a car accident on the way.
Yeah. He's like super horrible. Like,
he's dead.
Is Tracy Morgan and Artie here? No. Okay. And so I keep taking roll and he calls back. And I was like, holy shit, I think Greg is calling me. And I answer. And he was like, hello? And I was like, where the hell are you? And he goes, my high school English teacher just Facebook messaged me and asked me why I wasn't at a comedy show. Because she happened to be there.
Nice.
And I was like, yeah, where the fuck are you, Greg? And so he just goes.
You're doing this into the mic?
Into the mic, like awesome. Holding it up. And he's like, I'm super sick and couldn't make it. And I was like, what? Are you faking sick like a sitcom right now? Like over the phone, man, people are just crushing this. People are getting so excited about it. And then eventually, you know, he was in this phone call and everyone boos him and I hang up. And then I'm just like, okay. And then you can be like, well, now at that point, it's so settled.
Right.
That I do that anytime. It's like a one night thing now. I just go up and take roll.
Nice.
People have so much fun with it.
Did you think about that on your way to the stage or did it happen beforehand?
Yeah, pretty much. In like if the show started at 8 o'clock, I probably thought of it at 7:58.
I feel like that's the improv muscle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like not being scared. I see a lot of comedians, they'll have like the set list and not being able to veer from it.
Yeah.
You know, it's so limiting.
Yeah, I'm always okay with it if a show goes well and I've done half of the things I wrote down that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to tell everyone, no one's going to know you didn't tell them something.
Right.
Unless they had a good time.
Unless you're Andrew Dice Clay and people are like, Hickory Dickory Dock.
Unless they know what your name is, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah. So I, you know, I just kind of have fun trusting what I think is funny and not afraid. I mean, if it bombed, you know, I have the whole show now to figure this out. And how, I don't, how, what's the most that can bomb?
It wouldn't bomb because it's so in the moment, mm-hmm. you know? It's weird how an audience knows when something's in the moment or scripted.
Yeah. Yeah. And they can feel it. That's the great trick is you see so many comedians trying to make their scripted material feel in the moment. And when they can, it's just so good.
Yes.
Like if you see someone like, I like Drew Michael a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when I see him perform lots of times, you feel like he's coming up with these things and the crowd feels like they're the only ones who will witness something like this.
Right.
And then you see him doing it again somewhere else just as well and mm-hmm. just as fresh. And you're like, that's insane.
Yeah. I feel like that's where the actor muscle comes in.
Yeah.
And that's why I think stand-ups can make good actors because we're kind of acting all the time.
Mm-hmm. That's why people like comedians that sort of laugh at themselves a little bit too. Like Hannibal Buress, mm-hmm. when he kind of like is like acknowledging the absurdity of what's happening mm-hmm. while he's doing it. People are like, oh, we're all in this.
Right.
He's not just performing at us.
I feel like that's not very New York, though. New York is, like, very stoic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Some people are pretty rehearsed, I guess.
But, like, laughing at your own jokes is very frowned upon, it seems. I have to fight it sometimes.
Yeah, you know. But that we perform for a lot of comedians a lot of times, too. And then it feels like a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
You got to remember, sometimes people aren't comedians.
Right.
And they don't mind if you enjoy yourself.
What you think New York audiences frown upon comics laughing at their own jokes?
I'm not so much sure about the audiences, but other comedians, it's like very stoic. They like the delivery very stoic. Not that I want to cater to that or be that, but because it doesn't feel natural to me, but that is the style of New York.
Yeah.
Stand still, stoic face, deliver the jokes.
It's too bad. Y'all should lighten up.
I always like when there's a little bit of like a, hey, I know what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. I think pretty much anyone who's like great, I mean, anyone who's really, even like Todd Barry,
mm-hmm.
who is very subdued and quiet, yeah. still is just like, you'll see him like taking a breath and like, you know, we're all in here right now enjoying this is happening linearly for all of us.
Right.
I'm in the moment and people seem to really like that. And it lets you get away with a lot more too, I think.
Right.
Get people on your side, lets you have more fun.
Yeah, it's such a liberating moment when you can just have all your material in your head and deliver it as it seems fit in the moment.
Yeah.
Is that what you do?
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. When I'm having the most fun, definitely.
Yeah.
When I overthink something.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember when I had my last audition for the Montreal Festival, I was very stressed out, and my dad was in town because he'd planned the trip before I knew this audition would be on this day.
Oh God!
My dad was in town. The biggest show that I run of the whole year was that Friday, and the audition was on Wednesday. And I was like, it was the like fifth or sixth thing in the back of my head was this audition. I wasn't thinking I was going to get it. I was just like, just go do it.
Right.
That way you exist for them. This, you know, again, you know what I mean? Is that way you're around and they know that you're alive.
I just want to exist for them.
Yeah. And then maybe in a few years or whatever. And I didn't think about it that much at all. I was like, you know, I'll probably open with this joke. And then I just went up and just something happened right before I went up and I just talked about it for a minute. And then mm-hmm. I did a couple of jokes and got off stage. And it just was like, I was like, that's the best set I've had all year.
Was it?
Yeah. And then it was so great. And it's just like, but I didn't do it half the stuff I wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great set and they saw that I was comfortable and enjoyed what I was doing. And I think they liked that a lot.
So you're saying you were preoccupied enough where you weren't too in your head about it.
Right. I sort of treated it like if I was just doing some random show that I happened to show up to and they threw me up and you're right. Like, okay, yeah, I'll go talk for 5 minutes and you kind of do a thing.
Yeah. That makes sense because some people, and I might have become one of these people where you need a little bit of distraction to focus. Like if some people can't study or read, if it's total silence, they'll put on a little music.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Sometimes, or like how your brain opens up if you're doing like a mundane thing sometimes, like if I'm like washing dishes or something.
Yes.
Like, okay, well now the ideas are flowing and then I go to sit and write them down. I'm like, well, I'll just stab myself in the head with a pen. There's nothing here.
Right.
Back to the dishes.
The muse is very elusive. You know, she's flying around all the time, but we have to be open to her.
Yeah.
And sometimes it really does happen while washing dishes. I will leave my dishes and I like to do dishes in the morning, like when my brain is fresh and it's so meditative. I'm just doing dishes and thoughts are coming.
So. Yeah. anything like that. Mm-hmm. I've had the hardest time writing while I'm writing. Right. Lots of times I'll be trying to fall asleep and I start thinking of these ideas, and then I'll be like, man, if this is funny enough, I'll remember it in the morning. And then I wake up and I'm like, nah, I should have wrote that down. It's probably super funny, and I just forgot it.
Yes. I always try and write it down, especially these days with the phone and the notes app. I just always write it down.
Yeah, you can just record it in your phone in 5 seconds.
Yes.
And then when you do write it down, when you look in the morning, is it funny?
Sometimes not.
Sandwich hat under. Sandwich hat under.
Damn, it should have been sandwich hat over. Stupid.
Yeah.
And at Montreal, are the audience, are they mostly Canadian or is it an international audience?
You had your schedule for two shows, and the first one is like the big one. It's in this huge ass theater, and it's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And
industry.
All industry.
Mm-hmm. All, whoa.
Everyone is like, and you can really tell, like, the first night I went and saw a show that was basically for all industry, and you could tell who was looking for help and who was doing okay, because who was doing okay just crushed and didn't care that they were in front of all these industry people.
Right.
And then you do the show in front of them, and that was the same way for me. That was the same way as the audition, where I was super nervous about it the whole time, and then something really funny happened at the beginning of the show, and I was like, I have to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Megan Gailey, who is hysterical,
mm-hmm.
Was on the show in Montreal, and her mom was there, and Megan went out, and she was like, I just have to ask, Mom, did you get into the show?
Doesn't she always bring her mom to shows?
Yeah, I think so. And her mom goes, hey, and like yelled from the Black Abyss, mm-hmm. and people laughed a lot.
Yeah.
And so I was up like seven people later.
Mm-hmm.
And I just came out and I was like,
is Megan's mom here?
Yeah, that's exactly. I was just like, I'm supposed to ask, did Megan's mom get into the show? And everyone just went crazy because, like, no one had acknowledged this insane thing. And everyone's coming out and performing like they're practicing in a mirror because they're so worried.
Yeah.
And the place just erupted. And then I just, you know, I could just do whatever and be calm. And I still only did half the jokes that I wanted to do in the set, anyways, but it was good.
And did that lead to you getting the some industry interest?
Yeah. And then you have a bunch of meetings and you talk to people and.
That's cool. Yeah, because I wonder sometimes if they're looking for performance or just the written jokes.
They all talked about that. Mm-hmm. And the meeting's like, that's so funny that you brought that up. I was like, well, I mean, I think it's so funny that everyone was so tense that that was so funny.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's not that funny of a thing I did, but
yeah.
It's like in a really, really dramatic movie when something funny happens.
Was the air kind of like, tight? Right. Someone let the valve open.
Right. Because everyone's very worried. They're like, oh, this guy's sitting here and these people are sitting here. And it's like, yeah, I mean, but they're all like, you know, idiots too.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any performance tricks to kind of keep you in that loose state? No.
You should be bringing dishes to shows. Start doing some dishes and you'll be all right.
Yeah, I guess the less worried I am about a show, the better it generally goes. But I stress a lot about shows.
You do?
If I'm putting them on especially, but if...
Yeah, we talked about that on the subway a bit when we ran into each other.
Yeah.
I always feel like when I put on a show, I'm getting better now because my show's weekly, but I would always feel like I was hosting a dinner party, like overly concerned about everybody's...
Yeah. How's this person doing sitting up here? Are they going to leave? Are they worried about this? How are these people? What are the comedians doing? How do they feel?
And mm-hmm. just, you know. But then you got to worry about your own performance.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I guess, I feel like doing that roll call would probably be helpful. To kind of loosen up.
And then you kind of feel where the stage is at and how the microphone's going to be and if the cord has a short and where there's a chair and you know what I mean? All the weird things you don't really think about if you're on a bunch of different stages. You kind of want to know, where can I set my shit?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the sound guy? Where's noise going to be coming from? Is a door going to open all the time?
Right.
Weird little things.
So you think about that before you go up?
I don't, but I've thought about it sometimes on stage. And so if you have a sort of soft open to your set,
yeah,
you can kind of, that stuff figures itself out.
Do you normally open soft, or do you have like an opening?
It really depends. If it's someone else's show, then no, I'm not gonna. You know, you kind of go up and just do what you want to do. And if you're a cog in the show, but if you're the only performer on the whole show,
yeah,
you know, there's no hurry to me.
Yeah,
I'll just get all my funniest jokes out of the way so I can disappoint people for the last three quarters of the set.
Yeah, it's good to get them all on board and then just disappoint them.
Yeah,
it's like a relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it is kind of like a relationship, because when you act like you don't care that much, then the audience comes forward to you.
Yeah.
Right? It's like dating, you know? If you're too interested in the person, they're like, oh, back away.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe everything is just like high school.
I hope not.
I know.
And so the second show at Montreal, you said the first one was Industry.
Oh yeah, yeah. The second one is they pay, you know, it's a smaller show, and it's probably like 80 people. It's in just a different venue in Montreal, and more of like it's in what is like actually a venue in Montreal instead of like a big giant theater that obviously they wouldn't normally have Kyle Ayers performing in. Mm-hmm. But this is just smaller, and you just do another set. And I was lucky enough to have whoever see me, and I got to do some more sets and like open up for Brian Posehn and stuff on his like Montreal shows, and it was super fucking awesome. And you know, then the whole thing is just surreal. You're like, hey, you want to go watch Chappelle before we head over to this DJ Miller thing and then go get wasted? It's like, yeah, yeah, okay, what? Yeah,
right.
It was all just, it's kind of a party. Mm-hmm. It was fun.
Are you going to do it again? Or do you have to reapply every year?
No idea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, because you can't go be a new face again.
Right.
And I would imagine I'm not going to sell out a gala anytime soon. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I'm not like this big drawing face type of idea. And still, best thing, this is very unrelated, best thing the whole weekend was Weird Al. There's no better thing mm-hmm. on earth than seeing Weird Al played on the street, like to open up the whole last weekend of the festival.
Uh-huh.
And it was just, I've never seen so many people so happy in my whole life. It was like comedians with their kids and like everyone, you could, every age of people. It's the most incredible thing.
He's just doing his songs?
It's just everything. He did mm-hmm. every song.
Nice.
And he ended, and he did Amish Paradise, and he's like this big, big production, and then he finished, and he goes, oh, well, I'm supposed to be done in 2 minutes, so bye, I'm done, and left. And there was no encore or anything, and it was the greatest end to a musical performance I'd ever seen. He just like looked at his watch, and he's like, bye, I'm done, and walked off stage, and everyone thought there would be an encore, and then 15 minutes later, nothing. And so yeah. Everyone just sort of left.
That's good. Defy the expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Weird Al. He's just such a good, good energy guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's good stuff. So where do you go from there? They're just for laughs. So you did it. Mm-hmm. And then like, how do you build on that? You got the agent, you got the representation.
Yeah. It's still all you. You still have to do all the work. You know what I mean? No one is like, well, here's your TV show now that you were there.
No golden ticket.
No golden ticket. It's crazy. When I got to Montreal, I was waiting. I was in the airport and I was waiting for their shuttle to take you back to where the hotel is.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Brewer was waiting there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, hey man. And I was like, hey, you know, I introduced myself.
Yeah.
And he started talking about new faces, and he goes, you know, this festival used to just be the money grab. He goes, there used to be, there were so few comedians here that everyone would get rich. And he was told this story about when he came in like with Chappelle and a couple other people, and he wasn't even performing. Jim Brewer wasn't even performing. He's like, man, I left with like 2 TV deals and all this money to do this thing, and never really did any of it, but you know, it's just all of it, just this place, just money floating around everywhere. And yeah. Now it's kind of like a very structured, he's like, it's gone from like Coney Island to Six Flags.
Don't you hate hearing that? I feel like I hear that with almost everything. Oh, it used to be so much easier back in the day.
Yeah, but we'll probably be saying that to some Vine stars who are worried that they're not making enough money in their Vines or something.
Oh, right. Some Vine star is like, oh, it used to be so easy.
At the open Vine or whatever.
That's cool. And you also, I like how you think of these just fun, unique ways to express comedy, like the roll call.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then the roof breakup.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was all accident.
Yeah. So Kyle did this hashtag Twitter roof breakup thing where you just happened to be on the roof of mm-hmm. your building.
Yeah.
And you heard a couple breaking up.
Not even here. It was heard is an understatement. They were like, you know, there were like 20, 30 people on this roof.
And they were just yelling.
And people just came up and started yelling at each other.
In front of everybody. They're just asking for you.
It was so loud.
Yeah.
And my friend was like, you just got to write this down. And mm-hmm. I was like, well, you know, I'll just tweet out what they're saying, and then it exploded. Yeah. And it's still every day gets brought up on my Twitter, and it's been 2 years.
That's so cool. And Jerry Springer reenacted it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's all Jerry Springer. Wow. And he's reenacting it. And
yeah.
Then you get all these things, and people were... It was crazy. I mean, it was like... It's something like my website got 10 million hits because mm-hmm. I listed them all out in order on my website, and then it just went nuts.
That's so cool. Were you... So while you're tweeting it, you're like getting all these notifications?
No. It was like on a Saturday or a Friday or something, and then like a couple days later... One website was like, hey, do you mind if we just put this up? And I was like, yeah, that's fine. And then like the next day, mm-hmm. it was on like the front page of like BuzzFeed. And so that gets so much traffic that
right.
then every other site that is the same site as that
yeah.
is posting it. And then it's like BBC and CNN and Yahoo. And
mm-hmm.
it was so many. And then people want to do interviews and talk to me about like the... what is the word I'm looking for? Like they have these ideas about the whether or not this is an okay thing socially to do, and if I'm
ethics,
that's the word. Yeah, huh. I want to talk about that. So I'm just like doing an NPR interview, and they
did you have an ethic quarrel about it?
No.
Yeah, I mean they were yelling in public.
Yeah, I'm not gonna.
It's like, you didn't tag the specific.
I didn't put
couple.
Their names. I don't know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I changed the girl's name and changed. I don't even know if I used the guy's name.
Right.
But people are just like, some people are, you know, people are mad. There's 100 people mad about everything that could ever happen.
That's
so
true.
So those 100 people, it's people who are mad about something will be more vocal about people than people who think it's okay.
Right.
So there's going to be 100 people Always. Mad about everything.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, I just thought of the whole thing. I was like, you know, it's funny. I don't think it's that, I can't believe this is news. That's kind of what I tell people. I'm like, is nothing happening right now?
Right.
Like to where this needs to take up your time.
Yeah.
And be like, well, you should be happy with the exposure. It's like, shut up.
Right. Well, I guess people, it brings out the voyeuristic thing in everybody.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's why, you know, people like Jim Brewer or yourself or any other comic can't get the TV deals anymore because people would rather just be exposed to a couple fighting on their roof.
It's also much, you know, it's much cheaper than... For whoever's actually would like be distributing these things, it's cheaper to give someone $100 to make crap that 60% of people like than it is to give someone $1,000 to make something 90% of people would like or something like that.
Right. I'm surprised they brought up the ethics of that because that doesn't seem ethically ambiguous at all.
People are just like, oh, you can't have any private moments anyway. It's like, you know, when you just kill, you just shut up.
Yeah, you didn't use their names or anything.
No.
It's also not a private moment. They came up to the roof to fight.
They're yelling on the rooftops.
Yeah. It was. And then now every once in a while, someone else will live tweet something else that's happening. And then they're like, hey, you remember this one? And it like it right. always gets called back to it. And then it'll pop up and like people will be like, we just got this in Singapore. And it's just translated. And it's so funny. And so I'll get like 100 followers from Singapore.
It was translated?
Like it'll always, no. like a it just everyone pops up to a new translation. People think it's funny. Someone mailed me a pillow with a quote of it embroidered on the pillow.
Wow. To your home? That's scary.
Yeah, I don't know why. They just seemed nice.
What is the quote?
It's something. I don't have the pillow anymore. It was destroyed on accident. But
wait, what happened to
it? She said we're not talking about this on a roof in Brooklyn. And then it was like nice. It's in my old apartment. It might still be there. I don't know.
That would scare me.
It wasn't the highest quality pillow.
Yeah, it's from Singapore.
No, those are high quality. They got good kids making those. This was some actual adult.
I see people posting on Facebook like actual OkCupid or Tinder conversations they've had with someone and making fun of the person. And then there's the person's name and there's the person's face. And I always feel like, whoa, that is so not cool. Yeah.
I never did this. I never thought of this whole thing as making fun of these two people.
Right.
I was just like, because the whole time I'm thinking and I'm saying, man, this has happened to me. We've both been both sides of this.
We've all been there.
We've all been the guy mm-hmm. who is like irrationally defensive. Right. And we've all been the girl who is extremely suspicious. And so this is just like, look at this slice of existence. It's so funny to me when you take out any emotional connection to it.
Well, it says a lot about society and culture that people latched onto it.
Yeah.
They obviously identify with it in some sort of way.
Everyone feels something for some of these people.
Mm-hmm.
I also, I kind of agree with you with these, the screenshot of the dating thing.
Yeah.
You're on the app too. Yeah. We're all kind of lonely and we don't know how to find people. And there's no reason, we're all freaked out and no one knows what they're doing. And so, you're on there. You're not better than this person who is acting like an idiot.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're doing. No one knows how to do this.
It's bad etiquette.
Yeah. I don't know if you could. I just, even if you like blur them out and put it up there, and it's like, well, I'm not, you know, if it's so out of left field that it's like humans don't talk like this, it's kind of funny.
Right.
But if you're just like, look at these guys trying to get laid on this app for sex.
Yeah.
It's, you know, look at.
Well, I think it's similar also when people take pictures of someone on the street or the subway or something and post it like, oh, look at this idiot.
Yeah.
And it's like, that guy just dresses oddly. Like, do we need to expose that to everyone?
Right.
I don't know.
You know, yeah. It's sort of to me, it's like you're making fun of someone for something they can't prevent. Or, right. You know, it's not like you're making fun of like someone with a disability or someone who has something keeping them back. But, you know, what did that guy do 5 minutes before he got on the train or 10 years before he got on the train? And where's he going? And what's happening up here? I don't always mind. Like, if I saw, like, a picture of, like, one of those statue guys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the guys who were statues? Mm-hmm. I saw him, like, sleeping on the train. I took a picture. I'm like, that's kind of funny. Statue sleeping.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think the guy who's the statue would mind me taking a picture.
No. I think he would recognize that's a funny thing.
Like, right. Look at the statue. Because you post it and you're like, yeah, it's even early for the statue guy. And people are like, that's kind of a funny thing.
Yeah.
But if it's just, like, a someone sad on the train, and you're like, look at this idiot crying.
Right, yeah. Well, even the statue works while he sleeps.
Yeah. It's just all so weird.
It is an odd time for privacy, for sure. I guess nowadays, like, when you write something, on a dating site or anything, you just got to keep in your mind, this could be public.
I had there's a picture of me in a women's swimsuit that I took. A friend of mine worked for Victoria's Secret, and we had to do an interview. We were in Los Angeles, and we're doing an interview about the First Comes Love show that I was running in Los Angeles, and it was with a Skype interview, and a guy wanted to call and talk to the group of us that were out there, and I was like, I'm gonna put on this woman's swimsuit. So this guy's like, what the fuck is happening when I get on Skype? And so it's this woman's swimsuit, and it says dope across it, and if you look at like my Facebook profile pictures, it was my profile picture, and someone sent me a link one time to it being on some women Tumblr about like guys who need to come out.
Oh no.
And he was like, look at this guy's obviously gay.
Right.
And he's got his profile up that he's a straight guy. And it's like, what is happening?
See, that's,
this is insane. I just laugh. I think it's so funny.
Yeah.
But it's like, what is happening to you? Are going to complain about people. There's a reason you've been the lonely person forever.
Yeah.
Because you are just you take such a defensive angle about everything.
There's more case for ethics there.
Yeah. And you know, it's my picture. You can take it and make fun of it, do whatever. You know, I don't care.
It's good you're laid back about it.
But it's like I feel bad for that person or whoever's running this thing. Wow. They're so like you don't know me. Mm-hmm. You know nothing. I don't know you, and you're just like gonna pluck a random picture from the internet and be like, look at this guy. Clearly gay.
Was it a male or female that was doing that?
They were all men being judged on the site, so who knows? But
that's very zen of you, and the way you didn't let it get to you.
Yeah, what are you gonna
do? That's good.
Well, that'd be a weird thing if I'm like putting all my effort into that.
Mm-hmm. So when you go up on stage, do you have like a philosophy? Are you going up to satisfy yourself, or are you going up to make the audience laugh?
Oh, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. If I don't go up, I feel weird. Like, if you know what I mean, if you don't do it for a while, and it's just like a different itch.
Yeah.
So
it's expression. Yeah. You want to express yourself.
I never want to go up and be like, this crowd sucks.
Mm-hmm.
You never want to. I try to not ever blame the crowd.
You don't. Yeah. You don't seem like a blame the audience guy.
And you know, I never even really go up trying to like rip in. You know, I don't go up defensive at all. I more want to go up and be like, can we all believe this is happening? Mm-hmm. Not stand up, but like the stuff I'm talking about.
Right.
And be like kind of inclusive.
So would you say it's your search for expression, search for connectedness, or to bring joy to other people?
I don't know. Maybe like a search for awareness.
Mm.
I've always, you know, because I don't know. It's just sort of like this, you have to say these things in some manner to people if you have these ideas. And if, you know, before, once you're sort of getting into comedy and people are like, yeah, and then that feels so nice. Like any validation you get early on, you're just like, well, I guess this is what I do forever now.
The thing is that as you keep doing it, like even if you're headlining Madison Square Garden, this thing is going to hit you like, all right, I've achieved it all.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I keep going?
Yeah, I don't, it's, every day, if I 2 years ago, if I could tell myself 2 years ago what I'm doing now, I would be like, fuck yeah.
Uh-huh.
But now it's just like nothing's happening. Every day it's just like, well, I need to do this and this and this. Well, I want to do this. Well, I want to do this. Well, I want to do this. It's not, I have done this.
Right.
And yeah, you feel like it's like Seinfeld doing like Colbert,
mm-hmm.
yeah. doing stand up and guys just creating this stuff all the time. It's like, you can look and see everyone who is where you would be like, I've done it. And none of them feel like that. And you never feel like that. And
you're just hungry for the next.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's people are wired differently. I have friends from high school and friends from growing up who are just wired a little bit different, and that's not bad. Mm-hmm. It's not good. You know, they're you know, they live a life like this and I live a life like this, and it's just sort of what it is.
So are you speaking to the dissatisfaction of being an artist?
I don't know. I'm pretty satisfied, I guess.
Yeah.
I tell myself I'm probably not.
Mm-hmm.
I most of the time, I don't know if in my head I'm telling myself things to elicit the right response from me.
Rationalizing it.
Right. Yeah. Like I have, like when I would go to, for other issues, not for comedy or anything, but when I go to a therapist or a psychiatrist, psychologist, mm-hmm. and talk to them, I would only say things to try and elicit the right response from them. And I would catch myself doing it. And I would be like, well, if I say this, they'll respond with this. And they'll be like, okay, he's fine. And I can leave.
Really? So you're running bits on them.
Yeah. Not even like a comedy bit or anything. Right. You know what I mean? But then, yeah. then when I leave, I'm like, maybe that is a bigger, in my head, I'm like, maybe I'm more fucked up than I think because I'm just trying to manipulate
yeah.
the psychiatrist into thinking there's nothing wrong and it's working.
Right.
And so
or they're letting you think it's working because that's what
they... I mean, yeah, they let me not ever come back, so...
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, they probably... it's probably going to be pretty hard to pull one over on someone who went to school to not have anything pulled over on them.
Yeah, well, that's also the role of the psychologist is not to, like, push you, yeah. but to, like, kind of, like, come, like, let you come when you're ready.
Yeah. And then I guess you just move, and so you don't have to do it anymore. That's how you fix mental illness, moving.
Just keep moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why Dory in Finding Nemo, no mental illness there. She just kept moving.
That was such a sad movie. Do you still go to therapists? No, you stopped. You tricked them all.
I never liked any of them. Yeah, they sent me a certificate of trickery, and so...
You've got it by the pillow.
Yeah.
My certificate of health.
Just a nice section of smug in the corner of my room.
Your altar.
Yeah.
My Kyle altar.
And then just a tiny Heisenberg picture.
I'm all together now.
Yeah. No, yeah, I never really liked going. I could... You know, you have a because the first one was like school, like appointed to me by someone, and I felt like they were very on the clock, and it sort of turned me off to the whole profession.
Why was it appointed to you?
It just
you did to, something bad.
No. My friend, who I was staying with, killed himself, and people were all worried about it. And
oh, right.
Yeah. So they were like, "You got to talk to this guy because the school is like, well, you know,
in college,
high school.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Was he a good friend of yours?
Mm-hmm. And so you got to...
Did you see it coming?
Guy. What's up?
Did you see it coming?
No, but then looking back, you're just like, oh. Oh, yeah.
You saw it coming.
I should have.
Hindsight 2020.
Yeah.
Heisenberg 2020.
And so then, you know, the first person I talked to was just like the school therapist person. I don't even remember what they call them.
Yeah.
Counselor.
They call them dirty rat things because everything you say, they'll tell your parents.
You're just like, well, I mean, dude, you have puppets and like... This isn't going to work. I mean, he wasn't like using puppets with me, but I'm like, I know you're the district-wide counselor. I remember you from elementary school doing puppet stuff. And like this, I can't talk to you about this.
He was talking to you with a puppet head?
Yeah, like a doll thing trying to figure it out. And so he's like, I could just feel like you're on the clock. And this is, you know, check my box off and we're fine.
Right. You felt like he was doing it out of obligation.
Which he definitely wasn't.
He probably cared. At the
time, to become a children's counselor,
mm-hmm.
you have to care more than is humanly possible.
Yeah.
And you have to be like more sympathetic and more gentle
mm-hmm.
than anyone. And he definitely did care, but at the time I was just like, this guy didn't care. And it turned me off to like the whole profession.
Mm-hmm. You were doing it out of obligation.
Mm-hmm. You got out of class too, which is cool.
Yeah. You didn't want to keep going at all?
No. And then in Chicago and in New York, I talked to someone when there's like weird episodes of things happening. And even then, I'm just like, oh, I'm here. Mm-hmm. And then I leave.
Have they all used puppets?
Mostly the me as the puppet, but metaphorical.
They make a puppet of your dad and talk to your dad.
Just write dad on their fist.
Yeah.
You can put a little effort into it.
Yeah.
I do that on dates. I write dad on my fist.
Well, some people like to go to shrinks because it's a safe, open place where they can talk to someone about their true feelings and not have any repercussions about it. Like speaking to a friend or something, you never know.
So, yeah, I guess I've never really thought there'd be repercussions for talking to my friends. Mostly I just bury everything and don't talk to anyone about anything, I've been told.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that a common thing? Like people say you're not emotionally? I've had like
more recently because whether it's like people I'm in a relationship with or something like that.
That's a common string.
Yeah. And
they want you to be more emotional?
They're just like, sometimes they'll be like, I guess I don't feel like I know you.
Huh. And
sounds like their problem, not yours.
Yeah. Only happened to 100 or 150 people, it's always 150 people that have the problem. I can't find the common denominator. You can't solve for ex girlfriends here.
Right.
And so there's really only been a few people in my whole life, whether it's like a girl that I saw and was with for a long time and really felt a connection with, or like a friend. And then even then, they felt like I was withholding her or something like that. But I've had friends now who I've known for 4 years since I moved to New York in the past 2 weeks be like, I don't know anything about you. Like, I don't know you at all. Like, where you're from isn't something about you.
Right. They want to know the deeper.
And then I was like, yeah.
Do you feel like that at any part drives your comedy that you're standing up in front of all these people to share something in some other sort of way?
Maybe
expose yourself.
Yeah, because I feel like the way I expose myself to them is the same way I expose myself to people in my life, which maybe isn't the best thing. And I'm not like ever really on. I'm never really trying to be funny in like conversations or hanging out with people. I just sort of, my brain is always running, and sometimes I'll say things and they'll be like, people will be like, man, it's got to, you're always doing like this stuff, like being funny. And I'm just like, you should see this shit that gets filtered is so bad. And the stuff that doesn't get said, like this is like one out of a million things coming out. And I don't even know why I said it or what I said a second ago. And it's just going faster than my mouth. And
well, this is the great productive thing about romantic relationships is like, if you were with a girl that you really, really liked and her problem was you're not emotionally opening yourself, then that can kind of be the best part of a relationship, because good relationships help you grow.
Yeah.
So that's the perfect scenario to like, all right, I don't want to lose this girl, you know, what can I do to open up?
Yeah, I've said stuff like that before, and then you just lose the girl. Then you move. You know, a lot of the answers are in switching time zones that you live in.
Yeah. Has that happened here for you in New York?
No.
No. Okay. What's been your longest relationship here?
In New York?
Yeah. New York's such a weird place to date.
I mean, I don't even know how I would ever define anything that was happening with me and anyone here.
Well, like,
they would define it differently, but I don't know how I would define it.
That sounds like a very closed answer.
Yeah.
Well, like, how would they define it?
I'm not always certain I've been seeing the girl who's been seeing me. But I just never talk about things. I'll tell them, I'm like, look, this, you know, I'm not probably not going to.
Well, the monogamy
be
talk.
Girlfriend, and they'll be like, okay.
Don't they bring up the monogamy talk?
No.
You've never?
Then something just blows up and they're like, have you not been thinking of this like this the whole time? And I'm like, no. Mm. We never talk about it. Mm-hmm. So no. I mean, it's not like I'm out. I won't go and like hook up with people like I don't know. It's not like that's happening. It's not like I feel like I'm like infringing on them like sexually or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But I'm just like, I just like won't be around for a month.
Yeah.
And they're like, what do you can't do that? And I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. This probably isn't a good thing that's happening.
What do you mean you won't be around
here? Like, I just won't talk, you know, I'm not always like, I don't want to talk to people. I don't text people. I don't hold conversations with people throughout the day. If I'm not seeing someone or talking to them about something, I never ask someone what's up. I'll go 3 or 4 days without texting anyone.
Yeah.
Or calling anyone.
What about if they text you? Will you text back?
If someone texts me like, what are you up to? No, I'm not going to respond to that. That's stupid.
Why?
I don't know. It's like, what do you want? You just want to text back and forth while we're both watching TV at our houses? We're not going to go hang out. What are we doing when we're hanging out? I always wanted to go do something. I want to go work on something. Or why am I here?
Yeah. Well, what are you up to? Is like, hey, you want to get together? Oh, you're watching TV? Cool. Me too. You want to watch together?
What are you going to watch TV in the same place? I don't know. Then I'm just always like, I got to go. I want to be able to, I guess I always just want to like be able to go do something else. And so if I'm with someone, even if it's just hanging out, it's like, well, now I got to be like, I don't want to hang out with you anymore right now. Bye. If we're at my house, then it's like, can you leave my house?
Right. So wait, well, New York City, for anyone listening that doesn't live in New York, is a great place to be a wandering person by yourself, because you can just wander into all these places and you never really feel alone here.
Yeah.
Like in small
towns. You can feel lonely, but not alone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You could feel very lonely in a big crowd. Mm-hmm. New York is simultaneously one of the most lonely places that you're never alone.
You're so close to other lonely people here. I wish you could find someone amongst the throng of people.
But I do feel like New Yorkers are kind of like a little retarded with intimacy.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to... Human contact is no longer intimacy here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
right. If you're in Missouri, and if I'm in Missouri and I bump into someone, we're going to have to talk about it. Not like in a bad way, but it's like, hi, oh, you're there.
Yeah.
But here, it's just, you're just overwhelmed by people and sensory overload, that it's like, what? When can you be vulnerable? You got to put up a shell to get to a restaurant.
Right. But the time to be vulnerable is when you're with a person that you want to be to.
No, then you move cities. That's what I've been saying the whole time.
But there are only so many good cities for your comedy. Eventually, you're going to have to stay
kill
somewhere.
Kill those girls. What was the thing? What did you say?
Yeah. I guess if, you know, what it comes down to, if you're okay with that, then fuck everyone else. I think there's definitely this sense where sometimes people push their own agendas on people. Like, oh, you have to be open. You have to be vulnerable. But if you are fine with it, then that's fine.
Yeah. I don't know if I am.
Are you fine with it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't think about it.
I feel like Matt just hit my nail on the head, because it's like, yeah, I feel like pushing my agenda because I want people to be more open. And, you know, I don't see vulnerability as a weakness.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I'm pushing my agenda. You don't have to be.
Yeah. I always talk about how I want to be open, but that's kind of the end of it. Like, yeah, it'd be nice to be like this. I try and be like this. And it's not, I don't ever feel dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not lying to anyone. I'm not like purposefully withholding from anyone. I just don't like talking about stuff. And so if people really start asking me and prying for me, I'll talk to them about it. And then I'll be like, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Maybe you need a reason. You know, the reason to get intimately close with a girl.
Yeah, like maybe she like is famous.
Well, the sex can be really good. You know, it can go to another level if you have that close intimacy.
Yeah.
There's a reason.
Sure. Then I feel like, let's do this for this reason. Well, that's the wrong reason.
Oh, I don't know. That's
pretty good. Because then you're just setting yourself up to get, you know, hurt someone even more.
Yeah.
Something for the wrong reason.
So I'm sensing, like, there's a fear about it.
Yeah.
But you're okay with it. I don't want to push my agenda. I feel like I'm pushing an agenda.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I just care about other things, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't even know what. Yeah.
But aren't...
It's rare that I find someone who, after I come, I want them to be around anymore.
Yes.
I want to be doing something else.
But wouldn't it be nice if you did?
I have before. I have. And it is nice. There's a lot of people... It's a big difference between wanting to go to sleep and wanting to wake up next to someone.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel. That metaphor is how I feel about conversations with people all the time. But I want to have had this conversation with people. Not this particular conversation.
Yeah.
But it's like, you want to, like, I want to have had this, but not actually do it.
You're right. So you're enjoying your life when it's in the past.
I don't know. I mean, it's more like, I feel like I should have, I feel like this needs to happen, but I don't want to go through it. I don't know. If I'm making any sense.
No, it makes sense to me, because sometimes I'm like, I want to do that, but even
so many conversations, just like, okay, hello, hi, we are going through the steps to end this. Okay, bye.
Well, those are boring conversations.
Yeah, but that's how most of them are.
Mm. See, I'm a very curious person. I like asking people questions in hopes that it gets somewhere interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like my motivation for talking to people.
Yeah. I guess it's just never really, I have such a large sample size of uninteresting that it's like, it's like the lottery. When am I mathematically, should I play this? Now? Now's the day?
Well, sometimes it could take a few questions or a couple minutes to get to something interesting with people. And I notice that from doing this podcast, a lot of times it'll start off with small talk and then we'll get to some good stuff like an hour in.
Yeah, probably.
Well, I think that's what informs a lot of comedians as they're growing up. They're bored with conversations. They're bored with interactions with people. So they, to make it more interesting, are cracking jokes.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, I like talking with comedians and having... It's fun when there's no... It's fun and the funniest and the most interesting to me when there's no pressure to be fun or funny or interesting. Mm-hmm. And I struggle enjoying myself around comedians I don't know as well when they're trying to be on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, oh, I get it.
Can you tell the difference between someone that's trying to be on or
so
someone?
Fast.
Really?
Yeah. And it's, and you know, at least I can tell the difference of me telling myself that that's what they're doing. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know for sure.
Because I sometimes wonder that about myself, if I'm on or if I'm just being witty or if I'm just nervous, so I'm witty. Yeah,
that's such a correct, because I feel like I'm never actually on, but I feel like people look at me and they're like, I wish that guy would just put it to rest.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, no. So maybe I'm doing that exact same thing to everyone. I'm like, I really wish this guy would chill. And he's like, well, that's kind of how he is.
I'm glad we share the same fear then.
Yeah.
Because I wonder, too.
Sometimes you can really tell, though, that it's like, what is your agenda in this conversation?
I don't think I have an agenda, but there is like a social face we all put on.
Yeah. And I don't like that. I just get tired so quickly.
You know what? Fuck your social face.
Yeah. And it's not, I'm not mad at anyone for how they ever behave. I don't hold it against them or anything. And just like I would think they wouldn't for me. Like I don't, it's sort of, I guess the way when I'm out, mm-hmm. if I'm at a show or if I'm hanging out, I don't remember last time I went out, but you know what I mean? If I'm like out at a show,
right?
I don't say bye to anyone.
You do the Irish goodbye. You're out.
But it's like, what am I going to say? Bye?
Uh-huh.
Why?
I guess...
Then I got to... Do I got to hug you or shake your hand? And like, I don't know you people and you're here, but we said hi. It's like, and what is...
Well, here's a good reason to say goodbye. I mean, I do the same thing. I'll just disappear a lot because then you're adding time and awkwardness. But a good reason to say goodbye is if someone wanted to talk to you about a reason for something, you're saying to them, hey, I'm leaving now, so here's your last chance.
Yeah. They didn't know you should have talked to me. They should just come up to me when they saw me the first time.
Maybe they're like, oh, I'll talk to him later.
That's on them. I got a phone and the internet.
There's only a million ways to communicate.
Yeah, you're right. Like me leaving a bar cuts off communication with someone until the next chance happening.
All right.
It makes total sense, but yet people get very offended. Like, I'm like, Kyle left? He didn't even say goodbye.
That's the thing.
I don't
mind if people, I guess, you know, that's just weird to me if people get upset about something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, don't take offense to it. I don't think about you. Everyone, but you know, you always think everyone's thinking about you and no one cares.
Is this a New York disposition or is this always your disposition?
I don't know. I don't think, I'm pretty positive.
You are?
This is just like, you know, and I don't think any of this stuff is a negative way of thinking. And I don't care that other people say bye all the time. I like when people say bye. It's just, you know, whatever.
Yeah. No, you seem like totally healthy and content with.
Yeah. And I just don't put any weight on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like if I'm nitpicking and talking about why I behave a certain way or how I behave a certain way, it was like also none of it matters to me at all.
Yeah. What matters?
Ugh. I don't know.
That's a big question.
He makes this new type of tea that I like a lot.
Yeah. So what happens now? You did the Just for Laughs. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I got my question answered. Where do you go from there? Just hope?
Home. So you ride home in a car.
You just keep doing your work. Keep doing shows. Keep doing,
you know, it's now that I have this outlet where I can bounce what I want to do and they can help connect me to people and work for me. And, you know, it's a good mutual relationship that I have with this. These representations are cool. And, you know, I have things that I'm working on that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to be more proactive about getting them done.
Are you doing any acting as well?
No.
Do you like acting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's something I like. I've gone to some auditions and got some callbacks. But like, I'm not going to go grind to get in a commercial or something like that. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just go to the tons of movie auditions if it's not something I care about.
Yeah.
And they kind of figure that out. And they, like, when you know, when I first met up and signed with them, they, like, threw a million things at me. And I was like, nah, I like that and that. And that's fun. So keep sending me stuff that you think I'm interested in. Now that they get to know you better, they're not going to.
Right. Did they do that industry thing where they threw a million things at you just to kind of feel you out? Because I feel like there's a game, there's a language that the industry uses.
Yeah, probably just to see like what I like
and
what I'd be interested in. And then I'm going to like, I went to everything at first and I was going to auditions for like ABC shows and fucking, this show sucks. Like, this thing, you know, I wouldn't want to be in this.
Right.
I hate every day of this.
I think it's great that you have that clarity.
Yeah, yeah. They're great. So I just, you know, have things I want to make and I need to work on those, and you can always work a little harder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just keep working on it. And they're great. I love them and they're wonderful people. And they're upfront about things, and, mm-hmm. and they'll be like, you know, this isn't how this is going to work, or you need to do this, or, and they've, you know, they've helped me get jobs that I like.
Nice. You have any tours coming up or anything we should know about?
Yeah, yeah. I'm in at the San Francisco Sketch Fest on the 23rd in a mm-hmm. couple of shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm in San Diego on the 24th for one night. And then I'm in Los Angeles for the Riot Fest the weekend after that on the 30th and the 31st.
Okay, cool. So we should post this around that time to help you get the word out.
Yeah, they don't have to come. If you listen to this after that, it was great. All the shows were great, and they were sold out, so you couldn't have come anyways.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah, man.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.